Hi, everybody. I'm Beatty Cohn-Vredos, and welcome again to the Ask Beatty Show. And the reality, my friends, is that I think we are all needing a lot of help these days. I mean, given the coronavirus scare, I mean, I'm walking around the streets of Manhattan, and stores are closing, and people are walking around with masks and gloves. And I think this is the first time in America for a long, long time that we're having to deal with a pandemic crisis. And I think that it is so important. It is so important, even though we're being told to keep our social distance, that we find ways to talk to people, whether or not it is on Facebook or email, so that we don't feel so alone. I mean, the reality is that even for myself, I've been very anxious these days, and I'm just so grateful that I have my husband Jim, and I have my daughter, and I'm able to express the worries and the fears and the anxieties, and hopefully, in the release of all of this emotion, be able to really get some perspective on what's going on, and much more importantly, what we can really all do. Doctors, of course, are canceling appointments, hairdressers, manicurists, walking around looking at Starbucks closing. So the fact is that this just isn't something that's in our heads. There is a real crisis going on here, over and above personal crises and what's happening with the stock market and the political situation and the healthcare situation, or really and truly lack of access to healthcare for so many people. And again, I think it's very important that we do not avoid or deny or displace our feelings, but yet we find a way to get second opinions and third opinions on how to best cope with this very real life crisis situation. Every week I cite figures, depression figures. I mean, we're looking at it in America, and I think that these figures have probably really gone up in the last couple of weeks. 16 million adults in the United States who are suffering from depression, and that translates into to 1 in 5 Americans. Anxiety disorders. Every one of us, you can be sure, has been feeling a tremendous amount of anxiety. 40 million adults suffering from a variety of different anxiety disorders in this country. And the reality is that all of these feelings right now, they are normal feelings. You may feel crazed, or you may feel a little crazy, but the fact is that we are all real plus in having the technological world that oftentimes I am very critical about. I mean, this is definitely a way, a very major way to help us connect. And the thing too is that in the midst of all of this stress and all of the stress, we do have to find ways to try to live normally. Taking a walk, exercising. I gave up my gym membership for the next couple of months, and in our apartment, I have weights and I have rubber bands, and I'm finding that it is really important to find ways to continue to exercise, to continue to move around. A couple of days ago, I was feeling just really anxious, and we put on some music, and the dancing and this happened to be Broadway music. It really helped lift my mood. So even though we're having to make some real changes in our lives, I'm still recommending, and I'm sure people around the world are recommending, that we don't give up. We don't give up doing things that really work for us and things that are in our best interest, which of course means continuing to eat healthily, the plant-based diet. diets, the fruits, the vegetables. I was at a couple of grocery stores yesterday. Yes, there were really, really long lines, but it made sense. It made sense to stay in line, of course, keeping our distance and trying to find organic food so that we're going to continue to nurture ourselves and nurture our bodies. So again, the diet is really, really important. And now so many of the restaurants are delivering foods and the supermarkets are delivering foods. So you can make some lists of good, healthy foods so that you don't have to go out of your houses or you don't have to go out of your apartments, so that you're going to be able to continue to live a somewhat normal kind of life. And again, I can't stress the importance of the exercise. You can do it in your apartments. You can walk around. You can walk around the block. If you're somebody who enjoys meditation, I was talking to a couple of friends yesterday who never thought that they would ever want to begin to consider things like yoga. And even taking a really, really nice long bubble bath, anything that you can think of that is going to be in your best interest, that's going to help you calm down, that's going to help you to alleviate some of your anxiety. And of course, having supportive people in our life, even though you may not be seeing the supportive people face to face, you know, speaking to them on the phone, you know, using Skype, using Zoom. And these are all things, frankly, that I have tried to stay away from. For me, whether or not it's seeing patients or whether or not it's socializing with friends, I like to see people face to face in the flesh, so to speak. But now I have to say that it's a really good thing that we have the technology, that we're able to actually see people and converse with people online, so that you're not feeling so very alone. You know, other things that I have found that really are helpful is positive visualization, because it's very, very, very easy to get into a doom and gloom mentality, given everything that's going on. And if you just sit by yourself and you visualize, you know, we're into spring right now, the sun and the trees and the blossoming of the flowers, and just trying so hard to think about positive things that will help you, at least for a short period of time, block out and alleviate some of the anxiety and some of the fears and some of the depression that you may be feeling. A lot of people have always loved herbal teas. They have found that the herbal teas help to calm people down. I frankly have never been an herbal tea person, but I think given everything, I also am willing to try some things that I've never tried before, with the hopes that it's going to help to alleviate some of my own worries and some of my own anxieties about the reality of the new situation. And of course, journaling always helps to just get out our feelings. And that may be something that you may want to do. You may be someone who's never done it before, but it's a really effective way. If you haven't got anybody close by that you want to talk to, or if there's certain deep personal feelings that you would rather not share with anybody, it's a really great way to be able to just write in your own handwriting or in your own typing some of your deepest feelings, some of your deepest fears and worries. You know, another great thing, and this is something that I need to do a little bit later on today, is just take Chacha for a really, really long walk. And, you know, having a dog and having the companionship of a dog, which of course forces us all to get out and move and say hello in our day-to-day lives. And, you know, I was talking to a patient this morning who's been very depressed and very anxious about the current situation, and she acknowledged to me that she's just been eating boxes and boxes of cookies and having soda. and that she made a decision today that this was not something that was in her best interest, and that she was going to finally order some healthy food from a local supermarket to try to put her system and to try to put her head in a better place. And it's interesting that every week, one of the things that I always tell you is to minimize the social media and the cell phones and the computers. Well, I think that given this current situation, I would say that it's probably best to maximize your social media and cell phones and computers, because you don't want to feel that you are all alone. After all, loneliness really is a worldwide epidemic. And again, given this new reality, which I hope is going to be a short new reality, the more connections, the more social connections that we can have will make it easier to get through this very, very stressful period of time. And working has also, it's really, really changed. A lot of people are now working from home, so that is also a big change. I know that daycares, a lot of daycares are closing, so that people are having to make just so many accommodations for the reality of what is really going on. And again, I want to emphasize the fact that your anxiety and your worry and your depression and your scares and your fears about everything that has been triggered yet again by the coronavirus, that this is all normal feelings. And I'm hoping you're not going to be taking more pills and more anti-anxiety medications and more antidepressant medications. I think you just have to give yourself permission and realize that what you're feeling is normal. What you're feeling is understandable under the current situation, and to find a way, and to find a way on a day-to-day basis to calm yourself down and look at the things that you actually are able to do. Like yesterday, as an example, I was not going to go out of the house. And the idea of wearing gloves, it was something that I thought, well, maybe it's something that I really didn't need to do. And yet I put on a pair of rubber gloves, and I actually felt a freedom. I didn't feel that I needed to be in. I didn't feel that I would be worried to touch different things. So that there certainly are things, given the reality of our new situation, that can actually help to free us to try to go about our business as best as we possibly can, and understanding, of course, the things that we can change. And there's certain things in our own lives that we certainly can change, and we have the power over ourselves to change. And then, of course, recognizing the things that we can't, understanding the difference, and yet focusing very, very much on what we are able to do right now, and our families are able to do right now, to help us get through the scare, the current scare of today.
So I am so happy to have Rabbi Joshua Franklin as my guest today. So welcome, Rabbi Franklin. We really need your spiritual guidance today, now more than ever.
Thank you, Beatie. It's a pleasure to be here joining you, or at least at a
Well,
distance joining you.
That's for sure. So let me ask you, with everything that is going on right now, are you finding that more and more people are coming to you for spiritual guidance and support? I mean, life these days, it's crazy.
I think what people are missing right now, and the reason why I'm making a lot of phone calls and calling my congregants and checking in on them, and we're all trying to reach out to the people around us to have a sense of relationship and to have a sense of community and to have a sense of intimacy, all of which have become more difficult amidst the coronavirus outbreak in New York and across the country and across the world, really.
And
so what we're trying to do right now
responding.
Is we're trying to find a way to create those things from a distance.
And how do you find that people are really responding to this latest crisis over and above the crises that people have on a day-to-day basis?
I think there's the way that people should be responding and the way that people are responding. I would just remind everyone that it's not safe to go out to restaurants and to bars and to pretend as if you're young and you're immune or you're invincible from the coronavirus. Really, everyone should be taking on the social responsibility of social distancing themselves from other people. But social distancing doesn't necessarily mandate, or it mandates a physical distancing, but doesn't mandate that you really distance yourself in the way that you connect to other people. So what we're seeing, I think, largely is that people are still going out to bars, people are still going out to restaurants, because they're willing to put themselves at risk for that need to socialize and meet other people and find some sense of relationship. And what my advice would be is we've got to figure out how to do that without being socially close to one another, without being in a physical proximity to one another. And so my advice really is develop new ways to create social intimacy.
Absolutely. You know, every week, you know, one of the things that I tell my audience is to try to minimize the social media and the emails and the Facebook. And yet, you know, under these circumstances, I think that for so many people, this may be one of the only ways, especially if they're afraid about, you know, really going out to connect with people, you know, so whatever it is that people are needing to do so that they don't feel so isolated and they don't feel so scared and they don't feel so lonely, I think as long as they're being smart about it and they're being safe about it, that I think that social media and technology, particularly in these times, could be a real lifesaver. Do you find that to be the case?
Right now, our synagogue is working on the question of how do we transition, at least for the time being, of becoming a virtual community. And that is, all our classes are now going to be done through Zoom. All of our services are going to be live streamed, and there'll be no physical attendance other than myself and our cantor at our service. And we're trying to figure out these outlets of people to connect with one another without being in the same room. It's new for us. We've got a good social media presence, but I think social media isn't really necessarily an effective tool for connection. Shelley Turkle, you might have read her book or listened to her TED Talk. She wrote this book called Alone Together. In essence, she argued that we feel more connected than ever, and at the same time, there's a sense of aloneness that we have living within our interconnected social media world that we have. If possible, I want to try to avoid that. I think being alone together is a terrible feeling, and I know many people are experiencing that. Our question is really, how do you be together even though you're apart? And I think that question and that feeling that we're looking to create is a little bit different. So, you know, when we have our classes, people will be able to interact with one another, to participate in the classes virtually. We'll be able to see each other's faces. And it'll be different, and it won't be the same as being in person, but the goal is to still be able to create that sense of community at a time where we really need to be at a distance from one another.
You know, I think about
and other synagogues
and
are following suit. And synagogues and faith communities, we're not the only ones.
You know, I think about the Friday night service when, you know, Jim and I, when we were all together, and I'm just thinking about whether or not that's going to be a possibility for families and for all of us to be meeting at the beach this summer and enjoying and being able to celebrate Shabbat. I mean, all of these things there's such a question mark right now about how this is all going to play out and how it's going to be affecting us long term. We don't know.
That's right. No, what you're referring to, just for your listeners, BD, that every Memorial Day to Labor Day, because we're out in the Hamptons, we do our Friday night services on the beach, which is a quite unique experience. And the reason people come is not just because it's great music and it's fun and there's a Shabbat story and it's for everyone in the family, but they come for that experience of meeting and greeting other people at the beach in a place that's Jewish, in a place that's fun and casual and laid back. And God willing, by Memorial Day, this whole thing will have cleared up to some degree, and we'll be able to have our services at the beach. And if not, we will work to find some kind of an alternative. And although I know for sure that it won't be quite as good, hopefully we'll be able to still build the kind of community that we do so well when we're in person.
I was wondering something last night, you know, when I was thinking about speaking with you today, is what does our Jewish faith and the scriptures tell us about how best to really make sense of what's going on up with the current crisis on so many different levels? I mean, the coronavirus, of course, you know, just being the latest. I mean, what do the scriptures tell us? Is there some interpretation? Is there something that can help us make some sense over what's happening in the world?
So clearly, although there was no coronavirus in ancient and in biblical times, our scripture does have a little bit of wisdom on what the experience was like. I'm reminded, actually, Passover is coming up. By the way, we're trying to figure out how to have a virtual Passover Seder because we've had to cancel our community Seder. But so being that Passover is coming up, I'm reminded of the plagues that that were brought upon Egypt. And, you know, some of the plagues are nice and kitschy, at least our children like them, frogs and locusts and all these other things. But probably the one that goes most overlooked is the plague of darkness. When you think about darkness, it's not nice. If the sun doesn't come out, it's depressing. But actually, the kind of darkness that we read about in Exodus during the plagues is a different kind of darkness. First, the scripture, Exodus, tells us that it was a darkness so thick that you could actually touch it. And so, maybe that's metaphoric, and maybe it means that it was just a really deep darkness, kind of like the darkness that you get driving in the woods and your headlights don't bounce off anything and it just feels thick. But then it goes on to actually describe the darkness with something that I think relates to what we're seeing today. It says that for 3 days, a person couldn't see his brother. That's a really rich text right there that I think speaks to what's going on right here. For 3 days, a person could not see his brother or couldn't see his fellow. The darkness of something that blocks social interaction from our most intimate relationships in life. Look, the coronavirus is also like the 10th plague, of course, because the 10th plague is the slaying of the firstborn and the many deaths that happened throughout Egypt, just as there are many people who are dying in our country and in the world right now. But I think what we're talking about and what the conversation has been about so far has really been about the 9th plague, which we're seeing. That is a darkness that exists between our relationships right now. And what we've got to figure out is how to bring about light in those relationships without being physically near one another. And I always read this verse. It's interesting because it says, a person cannot see his fellow or his brother for 3 days, but in the Israelite camp, there was light. And so the question that I always have is, was there light in the Israelite camp because they created light, or was there light in the Israelite camp because there wasn't the darkness? And I actually think that each and every one of us in our relationships do, in fact, have the ability to create light, create moments of light. And that's what we should be working on right now, except we're not doing it again in physical proximity. We're doing it virtually. We're doing it digitally. Question is, how do you create light in our lives, in our social lives, when we can't have physical closeness to one another. So that's the plague that I think we're living right now, the ninth plague and the tenth plague.
Mm-hmm. Because, you know, when you look at what's going on in this country, prior to the coronavirus, we have approximately 16 million adults in the United States, which translates into 1 in 5 Americans, and I think that number is really low, Rabbi Franklin, who are suffering from clinical depression. 40 million adults suffering from a variety of anxiety disorders, suicide attempts. You know, I talk about this every week. By young people quadrupled over the past 6 years. So this is pre-coronavirus scare. Since 2011, there's been a 40% increase nationally for self-poisoning by young people. Young people meaning from ages 10 to 24. The homicides in so-called intimate relationships increased by 26% from 2010 to 2017. For women, I mean, these are really depressing statistics pre the coronavirus. 4 women are killed every day by their so-called intimate partners. The divorce rate for first marriage is 48%. For second marriage is 67%. For third marriage is 74%. So the light that you're talking about, it has not been present for quite some time in our lives here in America prior to the coronavirus scare. And are you seeing this also? Are you seeing these very, very sad and depressing patterns play out in your congregation at the Jewish Center of the Hamptons?
Absolutely. I think I see all of the statistics in real time. That you're talking about, which is an increase in loneliness, an increase in depression. I spent a lot of time when I was working at Beth Elohim in Wellesley, Massachusetts, working with teenagers and seeing increases, especially from when I was a teenager, increases in anxiety and depression, other mental illnesses. So those things are an absolute reality for what's going on right now. Yes, even before the coronavirus. I mean, I would add one statistic that I find interesting. I read it, and I have a colleague who wrote a book called The Heart of Loneliness. My colleague is Rabbi Mark Katz. And he wrote this book, and one of the statistics that he quoted was the decline in number of close friendships that we have, people who we talk to on a regular basis.
Right.
And it's declined significantly. We've had, I think it was, you know, several, went from the average person having several people with whom they had very close and trusting relationships and people who they talked with regularly about significant issues in their lives to one or fewer that the average American has. So, we're lacking those deep, profound relationships. Loneliness is a real thing that is pervasive throughout the world. People, I would say, one of the issues that we see is often look to find connection in the wrong place.
Exactly.
I'll tell you, I say something a lot, which is that the one thing that people need, but they don't know that they need, is community.
Right.
And it's one of those things, if you ask a millennial, I happen to be of kind of the older end of the millennial generation. You ask a millennial, where do you find your community? They might tell you, oh, I've got a group of friends, or, oh, I go to the gym, or it's in my yoga class. And what I remind people is that's not real community. Community is a place where you have a network of social people who you can rely on, who you interact with, who you share spiritual experience with or meaningful life experience with. It's a place that you feel centered and grounded. And I think that people are lacking community today. Look, that goes with religious affiliation is down. I think there's clearly a direct correlation, whether or not it's causation. I guess I'm speculating, but I think there probably is a causation between the decline in religious attendance at synagogues and churches and the increase in loneliness because people don't have the spiritual communities that they need as a backbone for their social networks and their lives.
But, no, I think you're absolutely I think that we are, and I think that people have been looking for happiness in all the wrong places. You know, the perception, the misperception, of course, is that the more money, the more successful, the bigger house, the more trips, the more designer clothes, that somehow that is going to do it. And it does it for the day. But then, you know, the lack, as you say, of real meaningful connection is what's lacking, unfortunately, for so many people. And, you know, I always think about, you know, what are the lessons to be learned? And I wonder, what lessons are we all going to learn from this latest crisis, the coronavirus? Yeah. You know, maybe people are really going to start to rethink how we want to live our lives, what is really important to us, and then go about, you know, finding a new path to find things that are really meaningful in life rather than things that are just so really unimportant and superficial. I mean, do you think that that could be, you know, the one of the positives that really come out of this latest crisis?
Look, I sure hope so. I happen to live in one of those places where, East Hampton, New York, where I see a lot of excess in wealth.
And right.
I'll concur with your observation that it doesn't mean that I'm seeing an excess in happiness out here. I think people often come to the Hamptons to escape something and to hide behind
right.
something. There's a lot of pain and a lot of loneliness that's out here. So there's definitely, wealth does not buy happiness, or quote the Beatles, money can't buy you love. We've got to find it, happiness elsewhere. And I do think that social intimacy is probably the number one place to look for happiness in life. And it comes not just from one-on-one relationships. It comes from communal relationships. And that's definitely the thing that we're lacking most.
No, for sure. I mean, are you finding that there's a difference in the way the younger people, your younger congregants are just reacting and living their lives as compared to some of the older, some of the more seasoned people who've lived their lives and have been around for a lot longer? I mean, do you see real differences in values and goals and how people are living and what's important to them and what they've realized is really just excess and nonsense? I mean, do you see that division in terms of awareness?
You know, some of it could certainly be experience, right? You know, the older you get, the more perspective you have on life, no matter what generation you're from. That could mm-hmm. certainly be at play. Look, I happen to be of the younger generation as well, so I don't have the same perspective that a lot of my elderly congregants have. But I would say that generally our older congregants who are regular attendees are happy. There's an interesting study about happiness. Happened a number of years ago. They tried to determine who the happiest person in the world was. And I think if I'm correct, the guy's name was Alan Wong. He's a Jewish Hawaiian who, you know, has everything that he needs living down in Hawaii. So the question is, what does he have that all of us are searching for but we can't seem to figure out? Well, one, I guess if you move to Hawaii, there's a different pace of life. That sounds quite nice. But I would say one of the components of his life is spirituality, whether it's Judaism or whether it's not organized religion. Even if you have a spiritual practice that works for you, I think that is important for each and every person to have in order to find meaning and happiness. And by the way, when I say spirituality, you can be an atheist and a spiritual person as well. In fact, I remind people that a fair number of our community are atheists or agnostics, and they still come because they find some kind of meaning through the community at the Jewish Center. There was a great theologian, his name is Martin Buber, talked about a lot in modern theology. And his whole idea was that the place where we find God is in the profound relationships that we form with each other. But he doesn't necessarily believe in this transcendent God that is far away and distant and large and everywhere. He believes that God exists in the moments of connection that we forge in relationships with each other, but not just ordinary relationships. So, you know, for example, you go to the supermarket, you're going to check out, and you ask the cashier how they're doing, and they say, okay, and give her a 20, and she gives you change, and you walk away. That's not a relationship that you find God in. But he says, when you connect with someone on this deep level where you're feeling, some people will call it chemistry, other people will call it something else, but what Martin Buber calls it, that's God. That's where you find spirituality. That's where you find God, in the relationship. We're trying to create that at the Jewish Center. Even our congregants who really don't attend all the time, don't attend services all the time, find the community to be a spiritual home and a place where they find those relationships that are life-changing.
You know, it's interesting. In my private practice here in New York and also in East Hampton, I see a number of people in their 20s and early 30s, primarily single people. And that's one of their biggest complaints and upsets is the lack of connection, the loneliness, whether or not they're students at Columbia University or whether or not they're working in corporate America. It is the loneliness and lack of real meaningful connection that these young people are feeling so discouraged about and so depressed about, and are trying to find ways to connect in meaningful ways other than on Facebook and tracking, you know, who's inviting who to what party. And I'm seeing more depression with the younger group than I have seen in years. So with the, you know, the more the social media has been around, the less connection that I'm experiencing with people who are coming in to see me for therapy. I mean, this so-called epidemic, and it's not really so-called. I mean, the World Health Organization has talked about a world epidemic of loneliness. I'm seeing that so much in younger, attractive, educated men and women. And, you know, when you talk about your older congregants being really happier, is it because, I mean, why is it, do you think? I mean, they're older, they've lived through many different stages and life stages of life. What's the difference do you see between the older, happier people that you're involved with and the younger people who I'm experiencing as being so, feeling so disconnected?
I think the older people who tend to have a sense of happiness, some of them have great marriages, but I think the key factor is that they have great community. And look, I'd like to think, I hope that we're one of the sources where they find that profound sense of social connection, of community with other people. I think it also happens to do with they're at a stage in life where they can count blessings, and that you know, one of the things that affects the happiness in the world is the pace at which the world lives. I've lived in New York, for example, and New York was, I felt like I was always rushing from one place to the next. I'm always trying to be on time, and I'm just beholden to the subway schedules and beholden to traffic. And it's angst-provoking to live in New York City, or at least it was for me when I lived there. And that pace of life creates stresses, creates anxieties. It's look, the more stressed, the more anxious you are, the harder it is to find happiness. I think the community out here, the communities that I've worked for in Massachusetts and elsewhere, in Pennsylvania and West Virginia, the older community changed their pace of life. And they simply slowed down. And one of the issues that I think we see far too often is that people are too much living within the hustle and bustle of a daily work week, which has gotten longer and longer.
Right.
And the average work week, as you know, is no longer 40 hours. 40 hours
exactly.
Is like the minimum for full-time. You know, now people are working 50, 60, 70, 80-hour weeks. You work an 80-hour week, I would imagine that would be tough for you to find happiness because you don't have time for some of the things that are truly important in life. Family, friendships, and community. Those are things that are really essential. And look, there are those of us who love to work, and work makes us feel good. It puts us in a good place. But I think we're missing the big picture when work becomes our number one priority.
And I think it has for so many people. You know, I joke, but it's really not funny. I mean, I'll wake up in the morning and I will be receiving emails from people who've been sending me emails at 3 o'clock in the morning. I mean, that is beyond. People are not getting enough sleep. And I think that it's true that work in many ways, I mean, sure, people have to work, they have to get a paycheck, but it has become a way to really not deal with a lot of other issues in our lives, such as our relationships, such as our own mental health, such as our own, you know, very well-being. And, you know, work has become the number one pastime for just so many people. And, of course, people are suffering. I mean, you can't work 24 hours a day, and if you don't get enough sleep and you're not exercising, you're not eating properly. But I have never seen, since I've been living in New York, that people are constantly, in quotes, working. And you kind of wonder, you know, really, what is that all about and how it impacts marriages and families and relationships and health. And yet I wonder whether or not maybe the silver lining with this whole coronavirus is going to be a wake-up call for us, and that we're going to have to really redefine what it is that's important in life and what it is that's really in our best interest in terms of how we want to live our lives and how we want to interact in our relationships. And I mean, that's what I hope maybe is going to come out of all of this.
Well, I hope you're right. Look, I'll also share, I agree with you completely about social media, by the way, and online and screen time. In fact, I gave a high holiday sermon this year about the issue of social media and the issue of our phones and our screens and how they impact our relationship. And one of the things that I decided to do immediately following giving that sermon was I decided to take a month away from Facebook, away from Instagram, and any other social media platform. And like
how did
many
it work
who have
for you?
Taken the time away. Yeah, like many who take the time away, I discovered that it lowered my anxiety, it lowered my stresses. I felt happier. I felt that my relationships were actually better, not worse. And life went on, and life went on for the better. Look, I didn't altogether scrap Facebook and Instagram. I need it a little bit for the work that I do. But I'm much more conscious of how I use those platforms as opposed to using those platforms as a... as time filler. And I think one of our issues that we have today is that people forget how to be bored. My daughter,
right.
Who's 4 years old,
right.
Has recently learned the word bored. She said, "I'm bored, Daddy. I'm bored." You know, I don't want to just give her an iPad and make her not bored. I want her to actually experience what boredom is like, because I think boredom actually creates creativity. Out of a necessity.
Mm-hmm.
If you're bored, mm-hmm. you figure out something to do with the resources that you have around you. And it generally, teaches you a valuable thing about how to spend your time. I think today,
I think you're right.
People get bored in the supermarket
you're
line.
Right.
They pull out their phone. The first thing that comes out. And people are never bored ever again. And if they've got nothing to do, they've got millions of TV shows to watch on Netflix, Hulu, or Amazon Prime. Endless, endless shows and movies that are at their fingertips. And that's eliminated boredom, which I think is essential for our social well-being and for our children.
No, you're absolutely right. And with all the, you know, with all the movies and all the social media, here we have, you know, Americans, we have the highest obesity rate in the world. I mean, it's just, I think we're in a situation right now in our lives. I mean, I've always looked at crises as opportunities to reassess where we are, where we've been, and much more importantly, where we want to go and what we need to do to actually get to a better place. And I think that this could be a time, because we're being forced to stay home, to really, really think about these kinds of issues. And it could be the best thing that could have happened, even though, you know, we don't like to be able to change our daily life and rituals. It could be a wonderful thing that's happened if people take the opportunity to start to look at some of the things that you're talking about. You know, what is really important in our lives, and if things are missing, what we need to do to get to where we need to go. And I'm hoping that's what's going to happen here.
It reminds me of that famous quote attributed to Winston Churchill, who said, never let a good crisis go to waste.
Right.
And look, that sounds terrible. Yeah, people are dying, and it's real, really serious. But, and there's going to be, God willing, scientific things that we learn from this crisis. But I think because of the isolation that it's created, I think there will be good opportunities for us to learn about the social dysfunction that we currently have and how to fix it. But
are you going to be talking about these kinds of issues more and more in your sermons?
Yeah, look, I don't give a sermon for the sake of just some word fluff that I throw out into the world. You know, I really hope that my question when I write a sermon is, how do you move the dial on behavior and in people's lives? How do you move them to action? How do you move them to live a little bit differently and live a little bit more intentionally? So I'm always challenging our community to figure out ways to change our social and cultural conventions that I think are unhealthy, and to change our spiritual conventions that are sometimes unhealthy. And how do we live life more deeply and meaningfully, spiritually, and in order to be happier people, but also in order to make the world a better place?
Well, and I know that since I've met you, I know that the impact that you have on people. And I really loved, I mean, we've known each other a very short period of time, but I've loved the kinds of things that you've had to say. I love your spirituality. I love your authenticity. And I'm sure that your congregation really must feel exactly the same way, that they leave you and that they leave services thinking about life and thinking about love in a more meaningful, in a more spiritual kind of a way. I suspect that that's the impact that you're having on a lot of people.
I hope so. That's the goal, I guess. But
That's the goal. Well, listen, it was wonderful speaking with you. I know we were supposed to be doing the interview at the Progressive Radio Network studio, but under the circumstances, thank goodness for phones and technology. And Jim and I really look forward to seeing you very, very soon. We're planning to go out to the Hamptons within the next couple of weeks. So listen, be safe and take care. And thank you so much. Thank you so much.
Thank you for
joining me on the
episode. Really enjoyed this.
We'll talk soon, okay? Take care.
All right, Kathleen. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Well, that was Rabbi Josh, who is the rabbi, the the spiritual advisor for the Jewish Center of the Hamptons. And I've always believed that when there are crises in our lives, we have some choices that we can make. We can, you know, continue to bemoan our situations and where we are in our life, or we can really stop and we can take a second look at where we are and how we live our life and what kinds of changes, what kinds of meaningful changes that we can make and need to make so that we can live a healthier life emotionally and physically and psychologically and psychiatrically. And it really forces us also to take a very honest look at how we're living, the kinds of relationships that we have. You know, I talk every single week here on the Ask Beanie Show about healthy relationships as compared to toxic relationships, and making sure that the relationships that we engage in, that the relationships that we have are with people who are loving people, good people, honest people, trustworthy people. So I think that when there is a crisis in life, it really is an opportunity for all of us to stop and to really reevaluate where we are and what kinds of changes that we would like to make, and to reevaluate how we are basically living. Because in the final analysis, it isn't in quotes the success or the money. It's the meaningful relationships and connections that we have with other people that are going to make all the difference in the world in terms of the quality of our life.